I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Cal, it's always good to catch up with you. Finally nailed you down. You got a big smile on your face. 2024 is looking pretty exciting.
Yeah, it always is. Every year we go into the year with excitement, being the testing rider for the Yamaha team. It's always it's always a privilege. It's always nice to go into the season, even though I'm not racing, with excitement. You know, trying to do our best to improve the bike. It gives me a new sense of some sort of achievement. You know, if you get it right, if you get it wrong, the way that we're getting it wrong at the moment, it's always difficult. But you always have that. That great desire that it's gonna turn around, and you know, the 2024 Moto Grand Prix season, as with the other championships, are always exciting. That I think the year started well in MotoGP, and we're watching it with bated breath to see if we can start to improve our package and the guys get up there in the races and in the championship.
Well, concessions have been a major talking point. Obviously, Yamaha are bottom of the list down in Segment D, along with Honda. Can you believe it? The Japanese down in the bottom tranche. But the great thing about that is it does give you a major opportunity to be able to work hard and get that motorcycle back. But Yamaha, are you confident they're going to be able to do it? Have you seen what's in the pipeline? Are you party to what they're engineering away in Japan and bringing to you to test?
Yeah, you know, and I have been from the start. I think the test team, you know, I've explained it before. A test team, when I first started, it was non-existent. It was a test team, and it was so far detached from the race team. It was just like somebody riding around on an M1 Yamaha, and the team didn't really, you know, I'm not saying know what they were doing, but there was no collaboration with the race team. And every year that's got better and better. And now it's probably the strongest point. You know, every year the test team do a great job, and they do a great job. But now I think it's really close. You know, the information gets fed back very, very well, gets fed back to Japan. And as you know, this year a lot has changed in Yamaha, in their mentality, in the way that we do things, in the way that the race team do things, and especially now with Max Bartolini there. You know, that's a massive thing. I worked with Max in 2014 at Ducati, and technically he was probably the best guy I've ever worked with to oversee everything. I've worked with some great crew chiefs, I've worked with great teams. I've never worked with anybody bad, but Max was just head and shoulders above the rest. You know, I never forget when, and he will tell you the story. It's quite a funny story between me and him. I rode that Ducati once, the first time I rode it in Valencia, and I said, the bike's spinning here. And he looked at me and he says, is it spin or slide? I looked at him and said, I don't know, the RPM's going up, so I'd say it was spinning. So he comes back 2 minutes later, no, the bike's sliding first and then it's spinning. I said, Max, I said, I don't care, mate. I said, you fix it. You know, we used to call him Squiggly Lines because all he wants to do is look at the data. But from an organisation point of view, he has been crucial with Yamaha this year. He's come into a lot of our tests. You know, the test I did Sepang and I did Qatar, and obviously he was there in both of them. I then did Jerez test, and he will be at a lot of my European tests this year. I have Silvano Galbisera as the crew chief, let's say. But it is still a very much Japanese testing team. Now, over the years, there's been no holding back. They send 27 staff to each test, you know. But it's just, as you know, and as sort of the fans and the world know, the European manufacturers at the moment have taken over. Now, when I sit with Yamaha and speak to them, I always say, it will turn back around. You know, how many years were them European manufacturers nowhere? You know, we saw Ducati come from winning the championship with Casey to basically being nowhere for years, and they still didn't win it until Becca won it 2 years ago. So now Aprilia are strong, KTM are really strong, and unfortunately it's Yamaha and Honda that are struggling at the moment, but that's the way racing is. You know, it will turn back round and they will become more competitive again. When, I don't know. I do think the concessions and the way that we're able to test and do some more things is helping. And Yamaha this year, I've seen a massive change in the mentality of how much they are pushing, but you can't do things overnight. You know, it's not one thing, you know. We sort of know what the problem is, but the problem has been the same the last 3 years. And I've said it for the last 3 years, but getting them to change has been very, very difficult. Now Max has came in, I think that's, you know, they've took a lot of handle on the situation and sort of looking in every area. And I believe it's only a matter of time before they will be a lot stronger than what they are now.
How much are they working towards the 2027 rule change? I mean, we've got the next 5 years of technical regs that will be coming out in 27. Obviously, the manufacturers are working towards getting a package together that they all agree on. Seems like we're definitely going to go 850cc, rah, rah, rah. How much of the work you're doing now is actually for that rather than for keeping the likes of Quartararo happy? I mean, for instance, Quartararo just signed reputedly a €12 million deal to stay at Yamaha. He must have done some due diligence to sort of talk with you and trying to work out where you're going with this package and how it's going to improve. And I suppose, again, cutting myself off with this, the $64,000 question is, are we sticking with an across the frame four, or are we going to a V4 at some later stage? I mean, where is all of this? A massive amount of changes that are likely.
Yeah, honestly, Keith, I don't know. I don't know what their plan is for the new regulations in 2027. I have no idea. They need to get back to the front first and foremost. And I think that with Fabio committing and their trust in Fabio and Fabio's trust in them, it shows that they're working in the right direction. If you're talking the rider market, did he have anywhere else to go? I don't know. But, you know, I believe that he's been with them for a long time. He knows what they're capable of. And he knows the bike that he used to ride, which is the bike I also tested once. And it was phenomenal. The 2019 bike, the 2020 bike as well, that Franco Morbidelli was riding that year was unbelievable. But now we've got more power and more power and more power every year, which is what Fabio has asked for. This is where the problem has been created. Now, yes, they need power, that's sure, but they only need it in fourth, fifth, and sixth gear at the end of the straight, you know. But I think that it took a long time for me to explain to Yamaha getting power, we're creating so many problems coming out of the corner that at the end of the straight, we're slower than what we were anyway, because the bike's spinning, the electronics are the biggest problem in the moment. They can't handle the power that we've got, the way that our electronics are working. So then we're slow at the end of the straight anyway. So another thing that I also said is there's 15 corners on each circuit. You know, we need to go back to being able to go around the corners very, very well, like we used to. Because if you take 1/10 per corner, that's 1.5 seconds. What you're going to lose in the straight is 2 or 3 tenths. Yes, you need the power to be able to battle, that's sure. So there's, you know, there's a lot of difference in philosophy of things, but it's putting it together. You know, we're putting wings on the bike. We're doing so many different things that some are working, some are not working. We have to try. But I think moving forward, I believe they're going in completely the right direction. It's just going to take more time.
How difficult is it as a test rider? You know how fast a motorbike is over a lap time, but a lap time doesn't necessarily count when it comes to actual race time, does it? At the end of the day, you're going to be amongst a whole group of riders that are going to be out, their bikes characteristically are going to be able to get under you, over you, or around you, or whatever it might be. How difficult is it a test rider to try and collate that information to make that work in a race pace type situation?
Yeah, when we go testing, we try and stay on a decent race pace. You know, I'm never now going to do the pace of the winners. That's sure. That's the reality. But if you're within 1 second, then you're there or thereabouts, because 1 second is sort of midfield. You know, as we see in some of the qualifying sessions, it's not. 1/10 is the top 12 or top 10. But, you know, if you're in a good pace, it's better than riding around 4 seconds off the pace, because the bikes change. You know, the bikes feel amazing 4 seconds slower. You know, so you have to be on your game. You know, when I came in to doing the test roll with Yamaha, Lynn Jarvis said to me, he said, I want somebody to grab it, you know, by the bull, you know, the bull by the horns and put in their all. And that's what I did. I still basically train like I used to train when I was racing full time. I still put in as much effort to be able to do my job, because it's also not a game that you can go into it half-hearted. I've always felt that you can't go into riding one of these Grand Prix bikes half-hearted. And you know, with everything that I've done when I raced, no matter if I was last, I still gave my all. If I won, I gave my all, you know, and I still do that now with the testing roll. So it is difficult. You know, the bikes are getting harder and harder and harder. Honestly, from, you know, obviously I'm an older school guy. You know, I preferred it when it was 2015, 16. No devices, none of this crap. But it's the way the game's going, so you have to go with it. But for someone like me, 38 years old, remembering to press levers and lights on the dash and clips on the start and all this thing, honestly, when I did the wild card last year, I did the two races in Japan. I got two long lap penalties for a start. The first race I forgot to put the front hole shot device on. The second start in the rain, I didn't put the launch control on. I put the devices on, but no launch control. Honestly, you get so flustered. But yeah, it's not an easy job being a test rider. And then obviously you're always having the back of your mind, you could be racing next week. That's a big thing. And that's another reason why I always said, and I always still put in the same amount of effort, because you don't know if you're going in. And like I did with Dovi in 2022, I had to turn up and do them last six races. And you know, that's part of the thing that you sign up for. And it's an enjoyable job. It's a rewarding job when you get it right, or when something that you've tested works, or something that Yamaha have brought works, because you can only test what they bring. And it's as simple as that. One good thing is with the Yamaha riders, we always had the same comment. you know, if I would test something, I would still want them to test it if they had the opportunity at a race or at a test. But we normally always still had the same comment, which was good. Maybe put in a different way. But, you know, what I would say doesn't work, or what I say maybe it's a little bit better is a little bit better. But, yeah, it's
the big difference is for testing.
I signed 2 years. So I'm this year and next year.
With the concessions being what there is, that's potentially six races a year you could be racing as a wild card in those 2 years.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. I know.
What about that?
I know Stefan's doing all six for Honda. This year, their plan is for me to do three Grand Prix. And it's fine. You know, the way that I always looked at it is, the first year that I did the test role, I did four races. The second year I did six races, and last year I did one. But I always do the same thing. As long as you don't go into it half-hearted and you prepare yourself well for it, it's fine. You know, it's okay to go in and do, but it's not easy. It's not easy at all, because they just get faster and faster. You know, and the riding style's changed. Since I finished in 2020, the style has changed. It also changed around that time. 19 to 20 already started to change when they started to bring that different Michelin rear tire. That really changed the game, because we used to be able to manage a lot the races. You could go fast for five laps, then you would see Dovi go to the front and he'd slow it down, and then he'd really push and stuff like that. And the racing was, in my opinion, better then, because you could pass each other, all these things. Now you've got these Moto2 guys come in that are big corner speed guys. You know, they don't park the bike in the middle of the corner like we used to and brake really deep. Yes, they still brake deep, very deep, but they don't have to manage the race. They can just go flat out for the whole race. You know, where we used to, I'm not saying play a lot, but you used to have to manage a lot more things than what you do now, really, with regards to the tires. So it's harder to jump in now and do it, because they're doing it every week. That's the big thing. But it's good fun. You know, it is good fun.
With your management skills, then, you should presumably enjoy the longer race more than you would do the sprint race.
Yes, but on the other hand, Keith, because you're not doing it every week, you get to about three quarters race distance in the longer race and think, how long's left? You know, where before you used to, you know, I have two laps to go and think, oh, if only I had four laps, I might be able to catch that guy. Now you're thinking, I wish this race was four laps shorter, you know, five laps shorter. But that's just a thing of not doing it every week. I think the more you ride, the better it is. Now, at the start of this year is the most off-road, being a test rider. I've done 10 days so far on the bike. And now I've just had a period of 6 weeks off. So I will be riding next weekend, not this weekend, next weekend again. And then we've got two back-to-back. I've got one day off in between. And this was one of the biggest things with Yamaha as well. The organisation of when we tested was a nightmare. We used to, sometimes, I think it might have even been last year, I had 14 weeks off. You know, and you can't just jump back in. You know, and I said to them, I said, we need to really improve it. You know, the other guys are testing a lot more frequently. I'm not saying do more, because the amount of days... You're limited by the tires. You know, we were limited by the tires, by how many we could use. And they were testing more frequently. Where we'd test twice in a week, and then we'd have 14 weeks off. And then we'd test three times in 2 weeks. And it was too long. You know, even for me, the guy that never rode a motorbike in between, you know, in the winter, I never touched a motorbike. I got off in Valencia and I turned up in Malaysia and I had not touched a throttle you know, and that was just the way I always was. So even when I have the 14 weeks off and jump into testing, I'm always okay, but it's not nice. You know, you spend first 2 hours of the day, you know, your head's all over the place. You're thinking the bike's got way too much power and it's just you haven't rode for a while. So, it's a funny job to have, actually. But as I said, an enjoyable.
Which races are you looking forward to? I mean, out of those wild cards, you say you've got three, but they could increase them to six, of course. It's their prerogative at the end of the day as the manufacturer. I mean, what ones are you looking forward to? Or what ones are you not looking forward to, I should ask, that they might force you to do?
Well, I know at the moment I will do Mugello and Misano. Now, the third one, I don't know completely their plan at the moment. Now, I've done Japan the last couple of years, and it makes more sense to me to do Japan because it's their home race. It's close to the factory, but it all depends when they want to use these concession things, you know, what they want to bring or when they can use stuff and what works out.
So rumor has it, the British Grand Prix is on the cards for Cal Crutchlow in 2024. That would be something extremely special for us, but of course, a lot of pressure and maybe not one that you would fancy.
No, I think, you know, being a British rider, being on the British grid is always good. You know, getting people to Silverstone. Silverstone has been very kind to me over the years. So if that happened, you know, it's great for everybody. It's good for Yamaha. It'd be about the time in the middle of the year where they would start to look at to do things, to bring things. But it's their decision where to go. But with regards to doing six, I don't know. I think what they're going to do is they will plan. There's a certain cut-off date halfway through the year where they have to relook at the concessions, and then whether they want to do some of the later races, which will obviously be flyaways towards the end of the year. I always think, you know, Phillip Island it's not really a good testing circuit, let's say, but for the Yamaha, they've really struggled there over the years. So, of course, going to Phillip Island, it's a great circuit. I would always look at saying to go to that one as well. The problem is with Phillip Island, when I watch it on TV, it's hammering down with rain and it's 5 degrees or something like that. You always think, yeah, I would rather skip that one.
But although, that's one of the trio that you've actually won in your three-win MotoGP career. So it's obviously one that's close to your heart from that point of view, because you can never forget the Grand Prix you win, that's for sure.
No, not at all, not at all.
I mean, sometimes it's amazing. I've known you since you were 16 years old, I think. You know, Cadwell Park, I think, was the first time I ever met you. And I, back then on British Supersport, when you were the wrong side of the white line just about everywhere, and you'd hold your breath as commentators thinking this is going to end up in a massive pile in the bales. And I remember that the first time I saw you ride.
It probably did, Keith, most of the time. It probably did.
But it was so incredibly competitive in Britain in Supersport back then.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
You think of the names that were all around you at that particular point. I mean, it was a fantastic era, really, from a British Supersport perspective. But British fans seem to have we've been starved a little bit of late in the MotoGP class. I mean, to get you back, if I might stick with the Silverstone thing again, I mean, to have you at the British Grand Prix, I would think that that Pringle and co at management at Silverstone would be absolutely ecstatic if Yamaha were to agree to letting you loose on a revamped Yamaha at the British Grand Prix. It would certainly put, I would suggest, tens of thousands of people on the gate, and it certainly needs it at Silverstone. I mean, you must look at what the attendance that's been there, and like me, wonder why is it so bad in years recent?
Yeah, I don't know, because you know, I've had this same conversation many times with people and people in the industry. We need a British rider, you know, in MotoGP. Now, as going back to what you were discussing before, Keith, the era, let's say, or the years when I was in British Supersport, British Superbike, World Supersport, World Superbike, that sort of era of British guys, and still now, is still so strong. You know, I was very privileged to be in that moment, you know, I was not the best rider out of a lot, that group. I don't know. I just think I wanted it more. Now, that's not me saying, oh, yeah, look at me. I wanted to, you know, I was just more determined. Simple as that. Now, that was probably why a lot of my results were up and down over the years, because my natural talent was nowhere near as good as the people I was racing against. I just was willing to dig in, you know, and that's the way I've always been. And that's the way I'll always be. Simple as that. But with regards to the British riders, we need to get one. The problem is who is there? You know, I'll be the first guy to say, I'll tell it straight. And you know that, Keith. There's nobody. You know, there's not. I look at it and think, who is there coming up? Or even over the last 3 or 4 years since I stopped, I would be the first to be supporting somebody and first to be able to try and do something about it. You know, Dorna do try and do something about it with the British Talent Cup. Imagine how much they're funding into that to be able to get somebody, because they need them, they want them as well. But I don't see anybody. You know, I think there's kids now that are really young, 12, 13. I think they're going to have the opportunity to come in 5, 6, 7 years, and you know, maybe around 20 years old, they will be the Moto Grand Prix riders. But to fill that gap, who is that? You know, that, and that's the reality. Now, I've never got to the bottom of why it is. You know, people say, "Oh, is it the British scene not pushing them, not doing this?" But they're trying to do everything they can. You know, there's nothing that they can't not be doing. You know, as I said, Carmelo and Dorna, they've funded this thing for years to be able to get British talent in. Now, I do believe it's a lot about opportunity as well, you know, but a good few of them have had opportunity to be able to do it. I think that if I look back, I was very lucky to be able to go, you know, when I started to bounce the championships, I obviously went British Supersport, British Superbike, World Supersport, World Superbike, MotoGP. But that was because I was ruthless and I just wanted to get to MotoGP. And then it was about trying to stay there. You know, I think you've got to make decisions based on trying to get there. And you're in it out of your depth. But a lot of it is now to do towards funding. You know, people are asking 120, 30, 40,000 quid to race in, a Superbike championship or Supersport championship. And I think it's so difficult now to be able to get there. I think that is one of the reasons. And obviously, I hope that we can get some guys to be in maybe first of all Moto2 and then MotoGP. Because it's what I want to see as well. You know, being a now fan that sits and watches at home, there's no British flag out there. And I wish there was as well.
It's a tricky subject, isn't it? Everybody we speak to here on OMG MotoGP, we try and put the same question to them, and everybody in all walks of life around motorcycle racing scratches their head and tries to work through the same thing, because we all do want to see exactly the same thing. If anybody's got any comments, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, do put them below us, if you wouldn't mind, if you're watching on YouTube or wherever. Make the comments so that we can pick up on them later on OMG MotoGP. I mean, you've just pretty much covered it. You won in British Supersport. You won the championship British Supersport. You won the World Supersport Championship as well, which I always think people forget about your world title in that. You've been a three-time winner in World Superbike, been a three-time winner in MotoGP. You've actually come the hard way. There are very few people that come through that sort of that early lower level super bike-ish type avenue, if you like, to get to MotoGP. Most people seem to go the Spanish route. You know, Bradley Smith and the like all went that way as well. I mean, where would you be directing somebody if I mean, obviously they're going to need the determination and they're going to need some fairly deep pockets to get them anywhere. But where would you say is the best area for an up and coming rider to be headed?
Yeah, that sort of goes back to my answer to the before question. I don't know, because to get kids to uproot their whole family to go to Spain at a young age, which is what you need to be now. I started racing late. I started at 12 years old. Now that's really late compared to what they are now. The kids now need to be very, very good at 12 years old in Spain or something like that to show that they've got potential for a Moto3 ride in a year, a couple of years. And it's so difficult. I just think they maybe not getting the opportunity coming out of Britain. You know, why? If I had the answer, I'd have 10 kids lined up at Carmelo's door saying, these are the kids, you know. But on the other hand, as I said, this the British Talent Cup, they're trying with regards to that. Maybe it needs another series that is Moto2 bikes or something like that, because if we're looking at getting the guys to MotoGP, that's not to say there's anything wrong with BSB, fantastic series. You know, World Superbike, a great series as well. The racing's brilliant. So there's nothing wrong with racing there either, but we're looking at the pinnacle of sport, and that's MotoGP, and we want a British rider there. So I think that the way that I went, yes, was the most difficult to do. And I think that's why we don't see them coming across or coming through. There was Ben was the one before me. Ben Spees was the one before me. Then there was me. Then Petrucci, Morbidelli, you could say as well, but he then went to Moto2. It's a really difficult route. Really difficult route. The problem you've got is a lot of these team managers won't look outside of the paddock they're already in. Now, that is one of the biggest things, as we know. You know, you sit and talk to the team managers and say, who are you looking at? And obviously, I've been in it for years. I tried to help Lucio with his riders and stuff like that. And Yamaha now with regards to the future or the last couple of years, etc. And you talk, and they just talk about the Moto2 riders. So, you know, they're not looking anywhere else.
Do you see that changing with? Do you see that changing with Liberty Media now taking over the major shareholding in Dorna? I mean, Dorna will still be the management team for the time being, but do you see it changing in the future? Liberty having a bigger hand in what's going on there, and of course, with the death of our very, very good friend Mike Trimby, who was a leading advocate through IRTA to try and make sure that stepladder for British riders was available to whatever British talent there was around at the time. I mean, do you see things changing in the nearest future because of these political changes that have gone on?
Well, I think, first of all, with regards to Mike, as you said, one of our great friends, but the biggest supporter of British riders there was. Now, there'd be a lot of guys, British guys, that wouldn't have the jobs they had if it wasn't down to Mike. And I have to say, at one point, me also, you know, he was great to me. All the IRTA team were with regards to pushing British riders. You know, he loved it. He loved there's a British guy out there, the British flag. So in that sense, I think that, you know, that's going to make it maybe a little bit more difficult as well with the Liberty Media thing. I think the whole Liberty Media thing, I think it's only a good thing for the sport. You know, I really do. I don't see any negative in it. I think the people bagging on it and this, that and the other. Carmelo has built, along with all these people in Dorna, his son, Carlos, you know, even the people that were there before, they've built a great brand and a great championship. Now, they're still going to run it. You know, it's still going to be there. The people are still going to be making decisions with regards to the racing. Now, does it change that much? No, I don't think it does change that much with regards to the racing side of things. The manufacturers still make the rules, essentially. But on the media marketing side, to me, it's only beneficial for everybody watching at home. And that's why we're having this conversation. You know, it's about Moto Grand Prix. It's about the hype in it. When you were more of a commentator, journalist, everything was in papers. You know, now we're doing this over an iPad and talking about it because it can go on social media and stuff like that. And that's the way the world is going. Keith, I don't like it. I don't do it. That's why I retired. But do you know what? It is the way the world is going, and you have to follow suit. Now, if you're going to get a big company to take it over and be able to promote it better to fans that essentially are the ones that we want to see the good racing, that want to buy the motorbikes off the manufacturers that we're riding for, racing for, etc., I think it can only be a good thing. So I hope that it becomes somebody in Liberty Media Dorna and says, right, we need to get a British rider, and they, you know, it works out that we get some British riders. You know, that's not just for British riders. I mean, in general, I can't see people, as I said, bagging on it, complaining about it. As we know, there's people that talk and think that they can run the championship. They have no idea what they're talking about. You know, there's a lot of journalists, fans and stuff like that. They're not in the paddock. And even a lot of them that are in the paddock think that they can run the championship. Well, I tell you what, go and get money and make your own championship and let's see. You know, I think they've done the right thing, honestly speaking. And I'm full supporter of Carmelo. You know, I always have been. I think he runs a great championship. He takes no bullshit. And he's kind, polite, and he will go out of his way for people. And over the years, when I rode that Ducati and we changed over, we were the first CRT team, if you remember, that moved onto the unified software at that time. And when we did it, I was like, what is all this junk? You know, the year after I went to Honda and I went back on full factory electronics that were not as good as the Ducati ones that I had, bearing in mind that there were unified software and all this. And if you look at actually what he was doing there, and he had the IODA bike out there and all these things, he was planning for what is now. Everybody gets the same treatment from the factories, and that's why it's good racing, you know. And there's nobody in MotoGP on a bad bike anymore.
There's no doubt about it that Carmelo Ezpeleta and his family and his team, you know, going back to Manella Arroyo and people like that, that have been great for the sport. Hopefully it will progress in the hands of Liberty. I suppose the only concern may be that the Americans need a bit more help even than we do here in the UK when it comes to motorbike racing. So maybe Liberty will be pushing a little bit for Americans. We'll wait and see. You mentioned earlier on that you're retired. Well, you're the hardest working retired man that I know, maybe apart from myself. But family is good. I've got to bring you to your dad. I mean, I have to say at the end of the day, You've got a smile on your face. You lead what looks like a lovely, lovely life. I mean, the way that things are at home seem really, really good for you. But I have to say that as a man well into his 60s, I sometimes just look north and I see this fellow called Deck Crutchlow, and he is the man that everybody wants to be when they get older. He is a dude, and he's really right up there in his 70s now, but there is nobody I know that seems to enjoy life like your dad.
No, there's not. And that's the way he wants to be. So you've got to let him live it. You know, he still flies his planes. He still, I don't know what it was, last year he's riding around Cadwell Park on a Panigale. He's flying around the world. He goes, he's got an E-Type Jag that he drives, his E-Type Jag, and he says he wanted his E-Type Jag because he used to have one 30 years ago, 40 years ago, or something like that. So he lives his life to his full. And he the last years that I was racing, obviously he came to all the races for years and years that I was racing. He did the pit board, and I could tell you some great stories about things like that. But when I was in my last couple of years, he was coming with Lucho, but he was flying the plane with Lucho to every race. So they had a little Cessna. Lucho didn't like to fly on his own. Lucho Ceccanello, being the team manager of LCR, didn't like to fly on his own. So my dad used to fly, and they'd just pipe up whenever they wanted. And they'd just get the keys, and they'd be off again. And, you know, Lucho's like a panicker. He's a panicker anyway. In racing terms, a panicker. In the garage, he was always panicking. When they were, you know, my dad, he doesn't care. You fly through, you know, the little Cessna and stuff like that. You fly through a cloud that you can't see, and the runway's 200 foot away and you still can't see it. And they just put it on the floor, and Lucho's panicking all the time. But he still loves doing it. Still, as I said, he's still got his plane. He's got his E-Type Jag. He's got his, I call them oil dumpers. They'll be from your era, Keith. He's got in his front room, he's got all these old bikes, Triumphs, dumping oil all over the floor and stuff like that. And he doesn't care, loves it, which, you know, is maybe the best way to be. But
yeah, I can't imagine Lucy letting you have anything like that in your front room somehow.
I don't want to. I've always been the guy that I don't like motorbikes. I like racing motorbikes. It's a strange thing, you know. I wouldn't walk down the street and go, oh, look at that bike. Look at the exhaust on that bike. Look, oh, that's brilliant. I couldn't give a shit. I couldn't care less. But I liked racing them because I liked the competition. I think it was like that. And I've been very fortunate that I've made a career out of something I loved, because I loved racing. You know, I wish that I would have raced out the back of the van, you know, all the corporate hospitalities and stuff like that. They don't mean anything to me. You know, I wanted to be in the era that you raced in. When you could, I'm not saying do whatever you want and get away with it, but in uncertain terms, I am saying that. You know, now you can't walk to the toilet without somebody taking a picture of you. And that didn't really appeal to me, especially in the end. Doesn't appeal to me now, didn't appeal to me then. So, you know, as I said, I was very fortunate to make a career out of doing something I loved. But I didn't love motorbikes, you know. Yeah, you know, I've been very fortunate.
Have you kind of made your mind up? I mean, we've held conversations before where you don't really know where you're going to end up in life, in the world even, where you're going to live. You've moved Italy, Belfast, UK, California.
America.
Have you kind of made your mind up yet?
No, not really. But that's all right. I'm happy with that. You know, obviously Willow goes to school. We're so lucky that me and Lucy have got Willow. She's brilliant. Best daughter. You know, obviously everybody says their kid's the best kid in the world, but mine truly is. That's what I believe, and that's what I want. That's what she is. And she loves football. And I loved football as a kid. As you know, I used to play before I raced bikes, and she loves to play football, and that's it. She's just fully into it. And we're actually going tonight to watch England women against Ireland women. And, you know, our life's just for her to do what she wants to do. So if she wants to go somewhere, we go, and that's it. You know, and we're lucky and privileged that we've been able to do that. As you know, my first three years she was born, she got to go around the world. And then, of course, she goes to school and she you know, love to go to school. So I think, you know, anytime we can get a chance to go somewhere or do something, we do it. But I just don't like the weather in the UK. Simple as that. So, plus I've got a few aching bones, Keith. it's as simple as that. But yeah, we'll make a decision as and when, but we're always happy. We're always having a good time. And as long as, the way I see it, as long as Luce and Willow are happy, I'm happy as well.
I think, Cal, you have, you've made a wonderful life for yourself. You've worked bloody hard to get to that wonderful life. It hasn't been easy all the way through. You've certainly taken enough injuries to get your attention regarding that as well. We wish you the very, very best for the rest of the year. We wish and hope that you'll be racing at the British Grand Prix at Silverstone. My money is on a yes for that. So we'll wait and see how that shapes up. But really, truly, sincerely, from all of us, OMG MotoGP, Cal Crutchlow, you're an absolute star. We love you dearly and we wish you the very best for the future.
No, thanks for having me on, Keith. You know, I wouldn't do it for many people.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.